and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservative, self-righteous idiots. How are you? Nice to see you. Good morning. Nice to talk to you. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great, Mark Maron.
Pleasure to see you, my friend, Kalo.
Good to see you, man. Good to see Chris LaPresso.
On the board. How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy.
Everything's all right? Everything's good?
Everything is great.
I'll tell you, I got something going on. Riley, is it time to read?
I'm just looking at these pictures.
All right.
This is my life we're talking about here. We got a guest coming up that's going to chronicle a little bit of my life.
Yeah, later in the show, we've got David Fenton coming up, the photographer who was documented the 60s and music, protests, and any number of he had a lot of pictures of protests. Well, are you looking for a picture of yourself? Go ahead, don't let me interrupt you.
I actually was in one picture once in the Village Voice at Columbia.
At a protest?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the, were you holding the fan, the hand
no,
up in the fist?
No, I was just standing in front of the fountain.
What the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
I'm going to class.
Where's the music? I wanted to hear some Temptations or something.
I got a problem going on. I go into Marino's and Sons today. Yesterday, to buy some fish. I can't buy any fish anymore. And the guy says to me, he says, so your wife's gone, huh? And I go, why are you saying that? He goes, because whenever she's here, you're in hibernation. We don't see you.
So wow.
Here, so he lays some salmon on me. And that's the way it goes. That's our relationship over there at the fish place.
You don't see your friends when your wife's in town.
That's right. I don't go to hang out with my buddies at the fish place.
But that's scary. They know your movements. They know your habits.
Of course. Well, I walk by every day. You know, the fish store's got the big window, you know. You look right in the window, you see the fish, you see the guy. Sometimes I'm walking across the street, and I get the, hey! And I'm like, all right, here we go.
And you call Brendan P.W.
Yeah. whoa, these are fish guys. These are fish guys.
Okay, F.W.
All right. Well, you know, I needed some salmon. I needed a fix. And everything's changing. The whole diet's changing. I get up at 4 in the morning. This is what creeps me out. It's like, it didn't wake me up because I'm up anyways, but someone's sawing upstairs at 3:30, and that can never be good. I don't know what they're doing.
What?
But part of me sort of like, well, hell, you know, it's a good time to get work done if you're up or on a weird schedule. But then there's the other thing. It's like, I just see body parts dropping on the floor.
Yeah, we've got the Westies living upstairs.
I don't know who the hell's it. I thought it was some nice man and his daughter, but I don't know what's going on up there. There was sawing going on at 2:30.
Nice man.
But you know, it's weird is that because I'm up already, it's not like I'm going to complain or anything, but I do want to know what the hell's going on.
Yeah,
you know,
I think.
There's a poll out. I'm feeling okay, but apparently America, the poll, the actual heading on the poll says, poll shows Americans generally in a funk.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm in a funk, really. 35% say another terrorist attack is likely soon. That's the lowest since 9/11, down from a high of 85% in October. So that's not a bad thing. 61% are confident the Bush administration can protect the nation from terrorist attack. That's down from previous numbers. A little confidence fluctuating there.
Mm.
I'll tell you, I was at the airport the other day in Seattle. They have you strip everything down. Everything comes off.
Really?
Well, I mean, you got to take your shoes off no matter what.
I took my shoes off on the way down to Orlando, but not on the way back.
Yeah, but, you know, it's hard to know. You know, from other stories we've had, it's almost anything. Guy almost got through with a chainsaw. People
get
guns through.
Hey, let me tell you the strangest story. This is
not
just
very
real
consistent.
Quick.
There
was a kid that was coming in with a broken leg, a whole thing on her leg, a cast and a piece of metal.
Oh, yeah, I know that trick.
They made the woman start taking the kid's stuff off.
Yeah, they get the cast saw right out.
That's right.
We're going to open this kid up.
I feel so bad for the poor kid. Here I am walking. Well, just take off your shoes, won't you, sir? Hold it, kid.
They're taking his cast off?
No, they took the metal. They started taking the metal piece off, and then somebody thought better of it, and they let the kid through.
I was going to say the poor kid's like, I just got it all signed and everything.
Yeah. I'm on my way to Disney World. This is how I start.
52% are satisfied with the war on terrorism, which is a new low, down from 75% in September of 2002. They still call it the war on terrorism. 39% favor the war in Iraq, down from a high of 72%. I guess that's the biggest hit right there.
Yeah.
You know, 72% in favor of the Iraqi war in April 2003, now down to 39%. 58% say the U.S. should continue to operate the prison at Guantanamo Bay. 52% approve of the way the U.S. is treating prisoners there. Those numbers are right in the middle. So that's about the only place that people are still in the middle.
You know who this is,
on torture. Who?
These are red state Bush-supporting people who are dropping off his bus. These are not the people that have opposed the war in Iraq from the beginning. We've got those numbers already.
Yep.
These are people who are little by little, bit by bit, becoming disenchanted with Bush's foreign policy agenda and his domestic policy agenda. You know, there have been these rumors that he may take private accounts off the table with his Social Security proposal. Why? Because his red state friends, first of all, his red state friends in Congress aren't delivering for him, and the people that they represent back home are disenchanted with this chief executive. They're disenchanted with the happy face thing that they're putting on the war in Iraq.
Oh, there's so many conflicting messages there.
Yeah,
you got
it's
people,
ridiculous.
Military, high-ranking military people on the ground saying it's unwinnable. You got people in the administration saying we're almost winning it. You know, and if you've got regular people having their own reactions, and the economy in Iraq is what people are becoming disenchanted about. That's where the funk comes in. Is that what it is? Is you get hit with so much BS, so much crap, so much propaganda, so much conflicting messages that eventually you just give up. You go into sort of a paralysis. This is sort of an extension of the domestic abuse model of the Bush presidency. Is that for months and months and months we were like terror alert, we're going to get blown up, we're going to get killed. Be afraid, vote for me. And now after all is settled, we're seeing the same President Bush that was there before the attacks on 9/11, the same sort of ineffectual lying salesman that was there before 9/11, and the administration and all of its arms, its propaganda arms, keep hitting people in the head, and they get exhausted, they get angry, and that looks like a funk, and it looks like disenchantment, and I hope you're right. But
yeah,
I'll tell you,
Dan Pashman mentioned something before we went on the air.
Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, our associate producer.
Uh-huh. Remember, now he's really on this Condoleezza Rice statement that the war in Iraq is going to turn out to be, or the American presence is going to turn out to be intergenerational. And he pointed out the fact that that was what the administration said, not about Iraq, but about the war on terror. So what you have is the administration commingling a message about Iraq along with a message about the war on terror and making them sound like they're interchangeable.
Well, that's one of the more devious sort of poetics of it. And we're going to get into Iraq in just a second. But I will say that one of the attempts of Jeb Bush, the president's brother, to re-energize, to regroup, to re-galvanize the Christo-fascist zombie brigade denial fanatics that were once and still are the base of the mobilized base of the Republican Party in some respect, is that he is going to dig this. Michael Schiavo, in a final sort of you to Terry's parents. All right, to the Schindlers, who did everything short of calling him a murderer, which I think they almost did, had these words etched on the brass plaque at the Clearview Cemetery where Terry's ashes were buried. Quote, I kept my promise, end quote. It also lists February 25th, 1990, as the day that Terry's soul departed the earth.
Yeah.
She actually died, obviously, on March 31st this year. But that's something that the parents, for making this guy, for marginalizing this guy, for crucifying this guy, for allowing her husband to be crucified. This is a guy that went to nursing school to take care of her and did everything to honor his wife's wishes in her horrendous state. So then Jeb Bush steps in and says, hey, we're not going to let this die. There's no reason for contrition. There's no reason for us to apologize. Even the autopsy proves that we were wrong, says we're going to investigate what happened to Terry Schiavo in that hour between when she collapsed and when, he supposedly called 911.
He had the time a little mixed up. It was 15 years ago, and the guy was obviously distraught.
But what a bastard. I tell you, Jeb Bush deserves the same place in hell as the Schindlers for exploiting this whole situation in order to mobilize religious fanatics into action. And he's doing it right now. This is his kiss-up to not letting it die because he knows that these religious fanatics are not, they're in such denial that they only see the autopsy as like, oh, that's just science. That doesn't mean nothing. That's got nothing to do with God. And so he's going to exploit that and say, look, I'm still on your team. We're going to make sure we get justice on this. And he says, I'm not trying to make Michael Schiavo out to look like anything criminal, but we're going to investigate this. So that leaves that hanging. That leaves the crucifixion of Michael Schiavo in place. The attempted martyrdom of Terry Schiavo is replaced by the crucifixion of her husband.
Well, remember, too, that there were threats on Michael Schiavo's life during this entire ordeal. Now, I'm not going to say Jeb Bush is resurrecting the wackos out here, but think about it for a minute. people threatened to kill this guy. And now Jeb Bush is still trying to make him out to be a criminal. Why?
Unbelievable. Why? Politics.
That's right.
Because that's what they got left. The people that aren't waking up are the people immersed in so much denial that they're willing to put religious belief over economic self-interest and believe anything that these guys say because they're like abused spouses.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, when we come back, or in just a minute, we're going to talk about Bill Frist waffling. What a spineless bastard that guy is. We're going to talk about Iraq and get more into detail into what you were talking about just a second ago, Riley. And Brian from Everett apparently is going to bless us with a new song. That's all coming up next. If you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark at 16 past the hour.
Oh, Frank, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
7. That's 1-800-774-7007. The call is free, the information is free, but the knowledge could be priceless. Barclay Financial, mystery solved.
I am feeling a little funky, I guess.
Yeah, I'm in a funk.
But it's a good funk.
Somebody called George Clinton.
Yeah, well, you call him. Maybe Wayne Gilman's got his number.
Wayne Gilman's probably got him on speed dial.
21 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We're going to talk about the king of spineless wafflers, Senator Bill Frist, in just a second, the doctor. But on the phone, we have a fan, a listener, who I didn't tell I was going to be in his neighborhood. I was on the ferry, just maybe a mile away from Brian and Everett's house. But he's called. He's listened to our show for years. He's for the year that's been on. And he's written a couple songs. I once made a comment that he had an inconsistent mental disposition, so he wrote a song called.
He ripped off that. That's for sure.
He's got some fans out there in the Morning Sedition listening audience, and he wrote a song about Al Franken. But apparently, Brian's got a song about us. Is that true, Brian?
Am I on the air right now?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Good morning, Everett. It's 3:22 a.m.
In Everett.
Only non-felon awake at this hour.
You all right, man?
Oh, I'm fine. Hey, my schedule is fine. There's the one to go to sleep and the one to wake up.
So. Okay.
I just wake up with coffee. That's all. But I do have a song. And by the way, the song's are $5.
Oh, okay.
All right, we'll get that right out to you.
Nothing. It's all about the Lincolns, man.
Yeah, I know. Sleep. Okay, well,
this is a song. I know you've got, what is it, Red Hot Chili Peppers as your opening theme?
That is Red Hot Chili Peppers, yeah.
And there's something about this life is more than a reason. I don't know what the hell, but I did write a song.
Okay.
If I could just tap this out real quick here.
All right.
And it'll cost you $5, but don't pay me.
Okay.
Because when you pay the debt, I can't control you.
Right. Okay.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. Ready? This is for your show.
Okay, thank you.
Sharpen your pencil, sharpen your brain. They're abstract and existential and they'll ease your pain. The facts and the fury and the funny for all. One's a little kosher and the other halal. It's the latest edition of Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Don't be stupid.
Right.
Thank you, Brian.
Very nice, Brian. I'm going to go out and slaughter a lamb for you now.
Huh?
I'm going to slaughter a lamb for you. I'm not really halal, but it sounds good.
Well, because you mentioned some. You said you had your friend on, your Gilman friend, the other day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You said salami bagel or something like that. You was going to salami bagel talk and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I missed that. Oh,
salami? That must have been Gilman because I don't eat red meat.
No, it's the Islamic peace greeting or something.
Okay.
Oh, assalamu alaikum. Yeah, I did say that.
Yeah, salami bagel to you. And
oh, God. Oh, Lord.
All right, Brian. Hey, buddy, you okay, man?
I'm grooving, man. Everything's good.
Okay, I was on the ferry going to a Whidbey Island.
Yeah, you could have dropped by and slipped me some of that celebrity juice, man. You could have, you could have at least, said, hey.
I was on the boat.
As afraid of me as I am of you.
I was on the boat, man.
Oh, this is going to a real wrong place. I
went on a date to Whidbey Island one time.
Oh yeah, I was on a boat and I was actually thinking like, where's Everett from here?
Did you go to the Mukilteo Ferry?
Yes, I did. That's right.
Yeah, that's right in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I didn't stop by. Next time, I'll make sure to let you know I'm coming. All right, I take that back. I take it back.
That's the most sinister laughs since Vincent Price on Thriller.
Here he comes.
Okay.
Here he comes.
Okay, Brian, you take care. Thanks for the song. We'll send that.
The Maronites, okay?
Okay, buddy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
The Maronites.
Yeah. One kosher, the other halal. Oh, my God.
Salami bagel to you, Brian.
Way.
All right, so let's get into this. Bill Frist in a beautiful waffleage.
Spineless jellyfish.
Boy, he said yesterday that there's not going to be any more votes on Bolton for U.S. ambassador to the UN. I'm going to have the president deal with it. And then he goes over to the president. The president says, "What are you crazy? You're not going to deal. I'm not dealing with this. You take it back. We're going to vote on this thing."
That's right, Mark. It was amazing because we kind of followed this. You know, we get a story list in the afternoon, and in the afternoon story list it said Frist says the future nomination of Bolton is in the president's hands. There'll be no more votes. But by the time I opened it up just before our call yesterday, it said, wait a minute, there's something completely different happened. He had lunch, and suddenly it's, the president wants an up or down vote. God, what a brown noser.
Well, I'll tell you, this is one of those situations where I'm happy about this because the Democrats are getting some traction. This is one of the areas where Joe Biden is actually being a very effective politician as the lead voice of opposition on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And now apparently what's at question here is the Democrats are requesting a list of 36 U.S. officials against names in a secret national security intercepts that Bolton requested and received. So this means that they want a list of names that were involved in these intercepts that Bolton was involved in.
It's highly unusual for somebody in Bolton's position at the time in the State Department to ask the National Security Agency about names of people that they had gotten on communications that they had intercepted, that they had wiretapped.
Okay.
Bolton wanted to know information on that, and nobody knows why. The White House has stonewalled every effort to try and get these papers, and the Democrats, showing some spine, say, look, we're not going to bring his name to the floor for a vote until we get the information we want.
And they're also looking for some preparation notes and some information of a testimony that Bolton was supposed to give to the House back in July of 2003 about Syria's weapon capability, that they're trying to get that too. So they're holding strong there, and it's still going to be a fight. Frist, he actually made some tonation, if that's a word, that they are fighting and they are a threat.
Yeah.
It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Stay with us.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
D-D-D-D. Rumsfeld.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. Good morning, Ithaca, New York. We're on. WNYY Progressive Talk Radio, 1470 AM in Ithaca every weekday from 6 to 9. Welcome. Happy to be there. Later in the show, we'll be giving away tickets to see me perform this Saturday night at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. You can also purchase tickets by calling 201-727-1090 or going to bananascomedyclub.com, bananascomedyclub.com. We will be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Ready for that, Riley?
Yeah, I'm ready for that.
We'll have free coffee, tons of giveaways, plus we'll be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame and New York Council Speaker Gifford Miller.
Yeah, no, they got the sassafras there.
I don't know, but
I love sassafras. Haven't had it in years. Love
sassafras
it.
Tea?
Sassafras tea. My mother used to make it.
You're a strange man.
I am.
Sassafras tea. Where the hell did that come from?
Hey, man, from sassafras root.
What is that? Oh, it's sassafras root? Is it sweet?
It's kind of got a very unique taste to it. If they have any there, which I'm sure they do if they're a real tea joint, we'll try it.
I've never tried it. That's what they used to make soda pop out of, isn't it? Wasn't it called sassafras?
I think it,
back
think
in the day?
Yeah. There
maybe
was
before your day?
Way before my day.
You know what? I'm thinking of sarsaparilla.
Oh, no, that's a different type of soda, yeah.
Okay, you think that has sassafras in it?
Maybe.
Okay, yeah, all right, good.
Who knows?
So we're raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. My mother sent me $100 yesterday and signed it to Camp Air America. I don't know what to do with the check. I've got to figure out where it goes. I'll go down to the office and find out where it goes. My
yeah.
mother, I don't know. She did, don't
send, worry.
Don't,
you'll don't get it to the right place.
Well, you remember I made that comment yesterday. I said she used to send me money to buy a shirt or something, right? So I get this call from my mother on the phone, a message. She goes, I'm sorry I sent the check to the wrong place. Well, bring it to the right place, or if you can, cash it and get a shirt.
But the need is great, folks, so please dig deep.
No, we're going to go. I'm going to put my money's my mother's money in. I'm going to put my money in. We're going to do that.
Too.
Hey, folks, sometimes when you read the headlines, you don't know exactly what they're saying. Thank God for this machine, the gleaming, shiny iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's feed it some headlines. That will be done live by P.W. McDonald at the what is it?
The Anthony Lamar T-Lounge.
Yeah, T-Lounge in Parkswell, Brooklyn. Here we go. From the Associated Press, SKKK member convicted in 1964 killings. Ex-KKK member convicted in 1964 killings. Translation, with victory, African Americans just 5,000 years away from evening the score. From Fox News.
True.
Bush accepts invitation to go to Vietnam. Bush accepts invitation to go to Vietnam. Translation, after his trip, Bush to insist on being called a Vietnam veteran. I'm going to put that through again. Bush accepts invitation to go to Vietnam. Let's see if we can get one more out of this. Translation, fellow National Guard members complain, oh, sure, now he wants to go. From the Associated Press, Schwarzenegger approval ratings sliding. Translation, Californians rocked by cruel realization. Reality and movies are different, separate. Yeah. All right, let's get into Iraq, if we can. A faction within the newly formed parliament of the Iraqi government has made a request in the form of a letter. Now, this is signed by Sunni Arabs,
yes.
Kurdish, Shiite, Christian, and communist deputies in a letter to the Speaker of the body for a withdrawal of U.S. troops. Now, this letter, I guess, was sent by this cat, Falah Hassan Shanshal, of the United Iraqi Alliance, the largest group in parliament. Now, this doesn't mean that they are stating as a government body that they want the troops removed, because the Constitution hasn't even been drafted yet.
No, the Constitution hasn't been drafted, but remember that the United Iraqi Alliance is the organization headed by Ali al-Sistani.
Yes.
Figure that his fingerprints are all over this letter, even if he didn't sign it.
All right, so this is a political move, but now, nonetheless, it is saying that within the Iraqi government, there is a large contingent that are saying, we want the troops out now.
Yeah, even though there's all of this violence, even though all these things, these negative things are going on, these folks, the folks that signed this letter, and this is not something that you can consider lightly,
right.
But the folks that signed this letter are saying, look, in order for the government to be credible, in order for that parliament to have any validity with the Iraqi people, they have to be seen as acting independently of the United States, and this is the first step in it.
Right, and the only the government has signed on to, they made an agreement with the UN to keep the troops there. And this is going against that, saying that they are not speaking for all of the people, and if they want the will of the people to be honored, that this contingent, though it is not speaking for the Iraqi government, is demanding a troop withdrawal. And we've got people in this country. Russ Feingold has put a referendum together to get an exit strategy in place with a timeline. Some Republicans are demanding the same thing in their own referendum. And we've got George Bush back in January who said, you know, when asked if Americans will pull out if the new government requested it, saying, quote, yes, absolutely. And this is a sovereign government. They're on their feet, end quote. So he has made that statement. Now, the interesting thing is that there's so much convoluted statements coming out of Iraq, around Iraq, not coming out of Iraq, but about Iraq, out there in the media today. And one of the things that is interesting now in terms of winning the war in Iraq or losing in Iraq is that you have a couple of statements. This is Dick Cheney. This is January, February, March, April, May 20th, 2005. Quote, the level of activity that we see today from a military standpoint, I think, will clearly decline. I think they're in their last throes, if you will, of the insurgency, end quote. And then we also have Scott McClellan. This is just the other day, June 20th. Quote, well, let me tell you where things are. The terrorists and the regime elements are desperate. They are going to be defeated. They have no vision to offer. They have no alternative to offer other than destruction and chaos and killing of innocent civilians, end quote. Then, on the other side of that, conversely, I guess,
yeah,
you have Senator Chuck Hagel, Republican.
Conservative Republican.
June 19th, saying, quote, things aren't getting better. They're getting worse. The White House is completely disconnected from reality. It's like they're just making it up as they go along. The reality is that we're losing in Iraq, end quote. And then you have Lieutenant Colonel Frederick P. Wellman in charge of task force, a task force to train Iraqi military. Quote, we can't kill them all. When I kill one, I create three. End quote. Now, these are, you know, definitely conflicting messages, and now we have a report that Al-Qaeda has announced a new suicide bombing unit that is made up completely of Iraqi nationals.
Now, where else but in the Middle East, after the fall of Saddam Hussein, would you have someone, in essence, send out a press release saying, we got a squad of suicide bombers. Where have you heard that? You've never heard that in Israel, for example. You've never heard the PLO send out a press release. Yasser Arafat, at his worst, never sent out a press release.
That's right. And the angle here is they're trying to deflect criticism, saying that it's all these foreigners that are coming into Iraq,
yep,
to be suicide bombers, saying, no, these are people from Iraq. And the CIA, in a new classified document, says that Iraq may be even more effective in training terrorists and jihadists, Islamic extremists, than Afghanistan was for bin Laden's generation.
Well, you know, Mark, we've heard these words before. That's why it's so eerie to sit, you know, to prepare for the show, and we start looking at this stuff. And then we start going back to some of the people that we've talked to over time. People like Mick Ware, for example. People like Rod Nordland, who have told us these very same things months ago. You remember Mick when he was here with us the last time?
Sure, let's hear that.
Recruitment. The significant thing, apart from the speed and the regularity with which they can do it, there is no shortage of volunteers. There is a deep, deep pool. I'm not sure if I've shared this with you before, but I've got a friend of mine, an Iraqi, who whose life just became a mess, his personal circumstances. He became dejected. So he turned looking for something, and he turned to the jihad. Now, fortunately, he's come back from that. But
was this a phase?
Yeah, kind of was. And I suspect this happens to a number of people. It's like, you know, adolescence gone wrong. But when he came back, he said to me, I went and volunteered to be a suicide bomber. And he said, you know, connected through a mosque to an organization. And they said, listen, God love you. We appreciate what you're doing. But our roster's pretty full right now.
Wow.
That was Mick Ware, who is Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, and he talked to us a couple months ago. We have to check in with Mick, see how he's doing. But that was defending and supporting the idea that there are plenty of Iraqis who are now part of the regular Iraqis who are now part of not necessarily Al-Qaeda, but certainly the insurgency as active suicide bombers.
Well, yeah. I mean, he wasn't talking about our roster is full of foreigners. What they were saying was our roster is full of Iraqis.
And that makes it scary because that sort of supposes a passion and a very sort of homespun reaction to the American troops being there and a commitment that is not really characterized in any of the administration's, you know, releases, certainly. And also, in terms of spinning this Iraq war, in terms of how it's presented by this administration, you've got all these, you know, mixed messages, even from Condoleezza Rice and in people like who said the administration, I think, has said to the American people that it is a generational commitment to Iraq. That was never said initially.
No, it was a generational commitment to the war on terror. That's what we were talking about before, Mark, how they interchange Iraq with the war on terror and confuse the American people into thinking they're one and the same, when in fact they are not.
And remember, this is a war that Donald Rumsfeld said back in, you know, 2003 in February. He said, quote, the war could last 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months, end quote. And Dick Cheney said this in 2003 in March, quote, to suggest that we need several hundred thousand troops there after military operations cease, after the conflict ends, I don't think is accurate. I think it's an overstatement, end quote. Complete miscalculations. And from all indications, I'll let someone who's been there speak for himself. Rod Norland was Newsweek's Baghdad bureau chief. He left Iraq after holding that post for 2 years. And when the war began, he was in support of the removal of Saddam's regime. And he talked to us last week.
There wasn't a plan in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They kept talking about, we have a plan. There is a plan. In fact, there never was a plan, and not one that was in any kind of form they could implement. And there isn't an exit strategy beyond training the Iraqi forces until they get to the point where they can actually take over. But that may be many, many years. And that, I guess, is what amounts to our exit strategy, but it's not much of one.
Is there anything changing on the ground there that you can see that could provide, any hope or any progress in terms of either the people in Iraq or rebuilding or anything?
No.
Wow. So that is from somebody who's been there. It's sad, but it's in some respects it's good that the reality, as Riley said earlier, is breaking through into the minds of regular people in the kind of BS that's coming out of this administration and the kind of confusion that's creating a sort of malaise. But there's an awakening going on in the country. Coming up next, Edgar Ray Killen is convicted of manslaughter in the slayings of James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner. We're going to get into that. Also, Kenneth Tomlinson, the Republican stooge who has been put in charge of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is now taking some serious hits from the Democrats, and he should be because he screwed up, and there's proof.
Yep.
That's coming up next. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. It's 46:47 past the hour.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world events and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
On the 90-day trial guarantee. Call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Fifty-one past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Wednesday, isn't that right? It's Wednesday. Am I right there? It's Wednesday.
Listening to the beat, I don't know what day.
All right. I'm telling you, it's Wednesday then. And if you're going to be around on Friday, and you're in the vicinity of Park Slope, Brooklyn, we will be at P Lounge with the show.
Yeah.
Live, 6 to 9 in the morning. We're going to have DMC from Run DMC is going to be there. Mark and I are going to be there. You can touch Mark. You can meet P.W. McDonald.
Oh, you can shake my hand. Don't try and touch me.
Dan Pashman has a big part in it. You can meet all your favorite Morning Sedition personalities. Cardinal Milfington will be there. Lawton Smalls generally comes out.
Don't forget the big
name. The revolutionary.
Name. Yes.
And, of course, we're plugging him. Gifford Miller.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to meet Gifford Miller.
Woo.
I can't wait.
He's going to save New York from Michael Bloomberg, whatever that means.
Right. Sure. So that's going to happen. Yeah, Michael Bloomberg's going to get voted out. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Gee.
Hey, look, maybe, who knows? Weirder things have happened, but he
True.
Seems to have some momentum, that guy. Look, we're going to have a ticket giveaway in a second to come see me in New Jersey, Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, at Go Bananas on Saturday night. We're going to have a game. So if you like
Not
to play
Go Bananas.
Games, or Bananas Comedy Club.
There
Sorry.
You go.
Go Bananas. That was in Cincinnati.
That was
Cincinnati. Oh, that was a little brutal. But this is going to be great. New Jersey's going to be great. I tell you.
Cincinnati was a problem in Jersey.
Boy, Jersey. Well, I had a lot of obstacles in Cincinnati. It was nice out. And that the Kentucky Derby was the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And that we just started the channel and we only had about 10 listeners. And they all came down. From
That's
Cincinnati.
Good.
But now there's hundreds of thousands. I'm sure if I went back to Cincinnati tomorrow, I'd bring in dozens of people. But in New Jersey, fortunately, it's not a huge room. So, I'm kidding, man. Come, we're going to give away tickets in a minute. For those of you who are just tuning in, and it's going to be a game, so if you like the games, I'm telling you, hang out.
Yeah.
All right, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. U.S. spending on the Iraq war may soon surpass the Korean War budget. Disturbingly, Pentagon experts quickly pointed out that the Iraq war will undoubtedly cost much less than the next Korean War. The Korean War cost about $350 billion, though a lot of that was later recouped in syndication fees for the show MASH. Yes. A study suggests that genes can influence political ideologies. The easiest way for geneticists to tell a liberal from a conservative is to kill a stem cell and check to see if the other stem cells freak out. A new poll shows Americans are generally... Get Sammy in here.
Yeah.
Got an email about Sammy. Some woman hates Sammy. Hates him. That's just awful.
Wow.
She's embarrassed for us when we have Sammy on.
I'm sure Sammy hates her.
I'm sure hates everybody. A new poll shows Americans are generally in a funk. Not to worry, once America accepts the basic absurdity and hopelessness of the human condition, they'll perk right up. The CNN USA Today poll had a margin of error of plus or minus 3 colorful pie slices. Only 36% said they thought Gitmo should be closed, while the remainder of those polled wanted to see more evidence of torture so they could, quote, get off on it.
Whoa.
Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today. Exciting stuff.
Yay.
I just did that like Carson. Exciting stuff. Yeah. Don't do it, Carson. What can I tell you? So let's get into this. Let's get into what I said we were going to get into, which was, oh, yes, Edgar Ray Killen convicted of manslaughter in the swings of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner. This is from 1964. Justice has finally been served, but not as deeply as it could have been. Manslaughter, not murder, Riley.
Manslaughter, not murder. 41 years to the day after Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner disappeared from their station wagon in rural Mississippi. Edgar Ray Killen, pastor, I might add, pastor Edgar Ray Killen.
Oh, they had all these defense witnesses coming up saying, the Klan, we're just a bowling team.
Yeah, man, we're okay.
We meet once a week and play cards.
Listen, the guy was convicted, boys. But folks, I don't think anyone should pat themselves, or maybe while you're patting yourselves on the back, consider for a moment that Edgar Ray Killen was a free man for 40 years after this took place.
Well, tell me about the manslaughter sentence, because that's different than murder, and I didn't understand the nuances of between manslaughter and murder. That means that he is guilty of murder during another crime?
Yeah, they had to prove only that the victim died while another crime was being committed. That could have been kidnapping, that could have been assault, it could have been any number of other things. And the thing is that they did not really have a great deal of evidence that placed Killen at the scene. Now, what they did have was witness after witness after witness that said that Killen plotted to kill Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner.
Yeah.
They called Schwerner goatee because he had a small goatee. Remember, you know, it's kind of indicative of the commitment to the civil rights movement that was there back in 64. Schwerner and his wife moved from New York to Mississippi. They didn't take a bus down there and fly home after every, you know, after every voter registration drive. They moved to live in Mississippi.
Yeah.
They had a total commitment to registering black voters in that
state. There's a lot of people that believe that justice hasn't quite been served because there were more people involved.
Yes,
And hopefully some of those people will surface now that these things are opening up and justice is finally being delivered to these racist bastards.
Bit by
these
bit.
Killers. So yep. We're going to come back. We're going to have a contest, some games. We're also going to get into Ken Tomlinson, the Republican stooge, who's head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, and of course you self-righteous people that think you know what's right for everybody. Even if you aren't religious, you're still annoying. How about that, Riley?
Ooh.
I said it.
You're a hard man, Maron.
Oh, but my cats love me.
There
man, do they love me. Am I a hard man? I am a hard man.
You
sometimes.
Are a hard man. That's the Marino brothers.
No, yeah, they would not tell me that. The Marino and Sons fish guys would say that guy's not a. He's a softy. Look at that
jealous.
Guy.
Look at him.
He said. They say I'm doing all right though. And these are guys who used to listen to Michael Savage, my friend.
Ooh.
In a couple of minutes, I'm going to give away tickets to see me at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. That'll be Saturday night. You can also purchase tickets if you want. Go to the bananascomedyclub.com or call 201-727-1090. Hey, look, folks, good morning. Ithaca, New York.
Yeah, yeah.
We're on in WNYY, Progressive Talk Radio, 1470 AM in Ithaca, every weekday from 6 to 9. Pleasure to be there. Welcome aboard. Glad to be in your heads.
That's right,
morning.
Cornell, Ithaca College, the whole night.
We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue this Friday from 6 to 9. We'll have Run DMC's DMC. And we're going to have New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has never had someone be so consistently excited about him over 2 days than me, for no real reason other than that I like his name, Gifford Miller. How could that guy? He's going to be all right. We're gonna talk to him. How's that going to be, my friend?
Hey, and you know, maybe there's some people upstate that might want to drive down. Didn't we, when we did the
drive
City
down
Baker,
to meet Gifford Miller?
No, drive down to touch us. I don't know. Didn't now, we have somebody came down? No, somebody came down
from Florida. They were in Florida.
Florida, and somebody from like way up in northwestern Connecticut.
The last time was great. People brought cookies. This guy, Hal, made this beautiful photograph of me that's up in the studio. Now that we got Franken out of here, we could, you know, put my picture up. And I don't know what he did to my teeth, but they look great in that. It looks like he did a Photoshop thing. They straightened my teeth, whitened them. I'm not a guy that loves pictures of myself, but that one I like. And I think the first night Sam Cedar turned it around, but he hasn't since. That's what I'm assuming.
It looks like you're performing in front of the sun.
Yeah, I am. I'm performing in front of the sun. I am the son of sun. And with the Air America mic. Speaking about getting caught, if I could segue into this.
Yeah.
Evidence has surfaced that Kenneth Tomlinson, the Republican stooge who has been put in charge of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, did some devious activities. Let me explain. What has happened is that Tomlinson provided incorrect information about the hiring of a researcher. This was last year, a guy he hired to monitor the political leanings of guests on Bill Moyer's show. This is his big enemy, Bill Moyers, the decent journalist with a good heart who does fairly balanced, you know, very insightful investigative pieces. I'm reading Bill Moyers' book. It just came out in paperback. I'm enjoying it. So the researcher that Tomlinson hired, who I'm assuming was a Republican stooge, Fred Mann, was paid $14,170 of taxpayers' money to collect and spin dirt on Moyer's guests. The criterion for judgment was whether they were, like, quote-unquote anti-Bush or, quote-unquote, anti-delay. The stooge revealing himself as a stooge, referring to Chuck Hagel as a liberal.
Chuck Hagel,
all
folks.
All right. So apparently Tomlinson denies that he did anything wrong, and he saw no need to consult the board about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting board about the researcher's contract because he cleared it with Corporation for Public Broadcasting President Kathleen Cox. But here's the rub, right, Riley?
Yep.
Because apparently what?
Well, apparently the contract provided, it was provided to a news outlet by somebody that's not real happy with Tomlinson. Said he signed that contract on February 3rd, 2004. The problem with that was 5 months before Ms. Cox, Kathleen Cox, became president of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
His alibi doesn't hold, people. This guy is the worst kind of stooge. And apparently 16 Democrat senators, Democratic senators, and several PBS characters, including the Joe Lieberman puppet, have called on President Bush, leader of the neocon death cult, to remove Tomlinson because of their valid concern that he is injecting partisan politics into public radio and television, which is exactly what he's accusing Bill Moyers of doing, which is ludicrous.
Well, you know, Tomlinson is not, he's saying for his part, he's staying in the job, Bush is backing him up. But Mr. Tomlinson, if you're listening, which you probably aren't, don't think for a moment that George W. Bush's endorsement is going to last past one more faux pas on your part. One more thing goes wrong, you're done.
And Waffle Man, the Waffle King, the spineless Waffle Man.
Like he was at Denny's.
Dr. Senator Bill Frist has done an amazing thing. He said yesterday that there is not going to be another vote on John Bolton as the U.S. ambassador for the U.N. by the Senate. I'm going to deliver it right to the president. So Bill Frist and his doughy little face. I hate guys, thin guys with doughy faces. His doughy little face goes up to the president, has lunch, and says, are you going to do that thing you said you were going to do and just appoint him?
No.
And Bush is like, hey, you got to go back.
Yep. Back to the drawing board. George W. Bush wants a vote on John Bolton. We've seen this time and time again in the Bush administration. When he has decided to get on a particular bandwagon, he gets real stubborn, he gets real hard until it looks hopeless, then he just declares victory and walks away. Right now, he's not prepared to withdraw Bolton's nomination, which, by the way, is something that Republican Senator George Voinovich has called for. Said, look, come up with a better name. In fact, Voinovich, although not naming them, said there are several other people that could do that job as U.N. ambassador better than Bolton.
We're going to open up the phones here in a minute or two, and you're going to have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see me in New Jersey.
Yeah.
At Bananas.
Don't snicker.
Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to play a quick set of sound bites of members in the neocon death cult, and you're going to have to tell us who they are in order. Simple, right?
Mm.
Okay, here it is. Are you ready?
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
Okay, you got it. All right, we'll give it to you one more time.
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
Uh-huh. All right, just to be nice, Chris, let's go one more time.
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
All right. The phone lines are now open.
Ooh.
At 866 303-2270. We'll give a pair of tickets to the first caller to correctly identify all four sound bites
in order.
You'll win a pair of tickets to see me at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, this Saturday, 8 p.m. One more time, Chris.
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
All right, 866-303-2270 for the night of your life to see me in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. One more time, Chris. Sorry,
but I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
We'll have a winner coming up here next on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 14 past the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Call us at 866-303-2270.
Where you take everyone's suffering and turn it into gold.
That's 866-303-2270.
All right, all right. What are you getting so steamed up about?
Morning Sedition. 1-888-33. Act now and we'll also send you a free 911 cell phone when you subscribe. 1-800-401-8833.
Team past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition. In a little bit, we're going to have David Fenton come out here. He's a photographer. He's got a new book out. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. And it's called Shots, an American Photographer's Journal, 1967 to 1972. Man, we got the Black Panthers in here. We got Abby Hoffman. We got the Weathermen. We got pictures of the Beatniks, the Young Lords. Who are they?
Young Lords, man. That was Pablo Guzman, Felipe Luciano. That was the Latino version of the Panthers.
I'm going to learn something today. Just amazing pictures of protests in a different time. That's coming up, and also we got the War on Brains coming up, if I'm not mistaken. But right now we got a contest going on. We got some people that want to know if they won. So let's hear it. Can we hear it again there, Chris? Is that possible just to put it out there into the world one more time?
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
So if you can get all four of those, I will give you a couple of tickets to see me in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday night at Bananas Comedy Club. Let's start. Here we go. Sharon in the Bronx.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon. Do you think you got it?
Yeah.
What do you
I
got?
I think so.
Okay, let's hear what you got.
I think it's Colin Powell.
Mm-hmm.
Condi Rice.
Go ahead and read them all.
And George Bush.
Sorry. Can't give it to you.
Did I get any of them right?
We can't tell you that.
You got
classified.
I know I got George Bush right.
You got one wrong.
And I know I got Tom. It wasn't Tom DeLay, right?
I'm not going to say. Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon.
Good point.
She wanted to try and get it.
You're going to have to wait, Sharon, until we tell you. All right, who we got next? All right, let's go to Aaron in Staten Island. Aaron?
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, guys.
What do you got?
Well, having heard the previous caller, I would like to adjust my first guess, and I'll go with Colin Powell, Condi Rice, Alberto Gonzalez, and George Bush.
Oh!
There you go.
Oh, we have
winner,
a winner.
Winner, winner, winner.
Guess what? You're going to New Jersey on Saturday if you want, Aaron.
Fantastic.
That is very well done. Stay on the line, and we'll set you up with your tickets to see me, Mark Maron, in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. What do you say?
could I just give a shout out to my friend Peter, who just passed his PE exam?
I think you
all
just
right.
did.
PE? What's PE?
What is
physical
that?
Education?
Professional engineer.
Professional engineer. Congratulations, Peter.
Okay. All right, now go out and build something.
Thanks a lot, Aaron in Staten Island, for playing. Stay on the line, and P.W. McDonald will take care of you there.
There you go.
Wow, man, I thought that was going to go on longer.
Yeah, well, hey, somebody, see, that was that first caller. Are you sure?
He changed his answer. If he hadn't changed his answer, I think it was a mistake on our part to even say that Sharon got any of them wrong or right. Am I wrong?
But she sounded so nice. Did I get any of them right?
You got to be nice to the nice people.
That's right.
Yeah, but then you see, but that's
not
all right.
Always.
The guy's going to go from Staten Island to New Jersey. That's a big night out. Right, Chris?
Oh, wait a minute.
No.
I'm kidding.
This is a short trip.
You should run over to Goffles Bridge.
Is it close? It is actually close. Yeah. What bridge you go over there? Verrazano?
We have two. Not the Verrazano.
No, the Goffles.
The Goffles, the Outer Bridge, or the Bayonne
Bridge.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I didn't make note of how many ways you can get from Staten Island to New Jersey. That's information I should have, because the next time in Staten Island, which is... When am I going to be out there, Chris? Are we going to go visit your family?
He's down the remote location as we speak. We'll be out there one day.
Oh, man. Boy, he's making me feel guilty. I don't know. Hey, let's talk about that. Let's get into this a little bit, because I think it's very interesting that, Michael Schiavo has had the final you to Terry's parents, who did everything short of calling this guy a murderer. And this is a guy, Michael Schiavo, who he got a nursing degree to take care of his wife. He honored her wishes. And on the brass plaque at Clearview Cemetery, where Terry Schiavo's ashes are buried, he had etched in there, quote, "I kept my promise," unquote. And it also lists February 25th, 1990, as the day that Terry's soul departed this earth, quote unquote, departed this earth. She actually died on March 31st, obviously. And what's even sadder and sicker about this is after the autopsy, as opposed to as saying, hey, we were wrong. You know, she was completely brain dead and possibly blind and certainly not going to come out of a coma anytime soon. Instead of saying that, pandering to religious fanatics, Jeb Bush has decided to get behind an investigation into this, what there I think is a mythical time period between when Michael Schiavo, this is 15 years ago, Riley.
It's 15 years ago. And
between
saying,
when he called 911 and when she actually collapsed. They're still hanging this guy up. They're still crucifying Michael Schiavo because their failure to martyr Terry Schiavo has so aggravated them that they can't be contrite, they can't apologize and say they were wrong. They must maintain their denial and maintain their religious fanaticism in the face of this thing, and Jeb Bush is going to exploit it for political means. Heinous.
Well, it is heinous, and what they're trying to do is use Michael Schiavo's own words against him. They're saying, and this is Bush saying this now, Jeb Bush says that Michael Schiavo testified in 1992 during a medical malpractice trial that he found his wife collapsed at 5 in the morning. And then he said later on, 2003, 13 years ago, or I'm sorry, 10 years later, 11 years later, in a television interview that he found her at 4:30 a.m. and called 911 at 5:40 a.m. Now, he may well have been, in both cases, wrong about the time. But for Jeb Bush to try and use that, to use his own testimony or use his own statements against him, given the fact that they, you know, there were threats made on this man's life, the parents just, you know, completely, you know, hurled allegations, unsubstantiated allegations of abuse against the guy, it's heinous. Every little bit of it is heinous, and it's entirely political.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking about politics and religious fanaticism, Pope Benedict the 16th, takes just in a book that just recently came out, just took a big moralizing dump right on Europe. In a new book that it's his first published book as Pope. He wrote it when he was still a cardinal in charge of the Vatican Propaganda Office or Church Doctrine Office. It's called, quote, the book is called The Europe of Benedict in Crisis of Cultures. Now, he's got his vestments in a bunch about the EU leaders' exclusion of Christian-y stuff from their preamble. He's pissed that the church isn't bringing in more business in Europe, and the only way to get money flowing, apparently, is to create a cloud of guilt and shame around the unborn that will hover over Europe for allowing abortion to be legal.
That's the biggest problem they have, not the sexual abuse scandals, not the $1 billion they've had to pay out, none of that. What's important here is this guy's view of how Europe, or whether Europe should, you know, install Christianity, essentially, as the state religion in its constitution.
Europe's got to step up. There's not enough money coming in from the European Catholic Project.
Mm.
Isn't that what you think it is?
Well, you know, I, look, this is a by the way, you know, it's eerie that he published this book and had Benedict in the title well before he chose Benedict as his name, as Pope. He was still Ratzinger, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger at the time. But, you know, it covers a lot of things, and a lot of people are looking at it as a harbinger of how this guy is going to act as Pope. Is this going to be his priority? Is the whole abortion issue going to be his primary focus here?
Of course it is. This is their big. This is what they use. This is how they instill control and guilt is over. The what they call the unborn, what some of us call a glob of cells. You know, either way, you know, you want to look at it. That's their wedge. Hey, congratulations again to Aaron for winning the contest. Let's play it again for people that didn't catch it and want to know what it was. Chris?
I was committed as anyone else to see
the president
give me a chance
to impose Taliban-like rule.
Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Alberto Gonzalez, George W. Bush, the neocon death cult stars that were part of this game. Aaron is going from Staten Island to New Jersey on Saturday night to see me at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights. I've never been to Hasbrook Heights. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's going to be big fun.
I think I'm going to rent a car.
You know how much Gonzalez sounds like Brendan P.W. McDonald?
Or the other way around.
Eerie.
What's that about? David Fenton, the photographer, is going to come on and talk to us about the 60s. Because I'm telling you, protest was based on these photographs.
You tell me.
And, you know, it really captures a time that I missed. Riley tasted.
I tasted.
And we're going to talk about Dave Fenton. Coming up next, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Mainstream media, to the extent that they have any will to do that, they're afraid to challenge.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
I guess I didn't know. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning, Ithaca, New York. We're on WNYY Progressive Talk Radio, 1470 AM in Ithaca, every weekday from 6 to 9 AM.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say we'll be broadcasting live from the T Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th. That's the one. Union Street and 7th Avenue, Park in Park Slope T-Lounge. This Friday from 6 to 9, we'll have DMC from Run DMC fame and New York City Council Speaker Gifford Miller. Gifford Miller. Yay! Can't wait to meet him. All right, listen, our guest here. Back in the day when the street protests really meant something, David Fenton was a young photojournalist traveling the country to capture the chaos. A collection of his photographs appears in the newly released Shots, an American Photographer's Journal, 1967 to 1972. It's a beautiful book. I got it sitting right here in front of me. David Fenton joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming, man.
Thanks for having me.
I'll tell you, when I was 5 years old, I think your pictures blew my mind, because I was like one of those sort of hippie, aspiring hippie five-year-olds.
That was early.
Yeah, I was all in it. You know, I had the beaded vest and everything. My parents were supportive of my hippiness at six.
You mean part of your hippiness.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, tell me about, like, there was so much action, so much energy and chaos coming off of these pictures, and I don't see this type of protest. When it does happen, it seems to be pretty immediately trivialized by the media, and it almost looks like a costume party, but this was the original stuff. Do you think this type of protest is effective anymore?
I think it's less effective. The media doesn't treat it as seriously,
mm-hmm.
and also it's kind of an old story. Unless you can gather really enormous numbers of people in the street and do really creative stuff, like what happened at Seattle at the
mm-hmm.
WTO. I mean, there's still a role for it, of course.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, people learn through repetition. And a thing about a demonstration is that you get a story one day, and it may not even be a great story. And then what happens?
Uh-huh.
So I think that the current forms of protest using the Internet, MoveOn.org, things like that, which I'm very involved in, you know, is the modern-day equivalent. And Air America is the modern-day equivalent of the underground press for whom I took these photographs.
Liberation mm-hmm. News Service.
That's right. You know, we have a theocratic corporate state now,
yes.
and we have a media that, with some exceptions, does not tell the truth about what's going on. And people really are starved for information. And so the anti-war movement was fed by this underground anti-war press that told the truth about the Vietnam War. And the same thing, I think, is going to start happening on Iraq now.
And it's also, it was interesting at that time when you had three primary media outlets that you could take a prank or a protest or some sort of act of civil disobedience and make national news in a very impactful way. You had a relationship with Abbie Hoffman, who was very good at this.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He understood the impact of television on our politics, I think, first, ahead of just about anybody. Maybe Richard Nixon was there, too. And I used to watch Abbie. I was at the Chicago 7 trial,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if people know about, but basically at the Democratic Convention in 1968, the police rioted, beat up a bunch of people. The government charged the protesters with conspiracy to incite riots, put them on trial. And this was a very theatrical trial that dominated the nation's news every day for many weeks. So I'd go with Abbie from the courtroom back to the office, and we'd watch the Walter Cronkite News, which was like watching the reviews in Variety for the day, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd see how he and Tom Hayden and Jerry Rubin and Dave Dellinger would plot their strategy in Bill Kunstler for the next day based on what they were seeing on the news that night. So I learned a lot about public relations from Abbie. He was incredibly brilliant. And, of course, he also was a manic depressive, and he killed himself. And, you know, the line between his mania and his genius was always hard to discern. But he was incredibly funny, too.
David Fenton is our guest in studio. Of course, one of the highlights of the Chicago 7 trial was Bobby Seale being bound and gagged in the courtroom by Judge Julius Hoffman was his name, I believe.
Julius Hoffman.
Yeah, it was an incredible period. But, you know, David Fenton, one of the things that strikes me about looking at your book is, and I again came of age at around the same time, was the sense, at least at the beginning of all this, that something could be accomplished, that change and progress, which are actually two different things, could in fact be made. Did you share that kind of optimism, and when did it end for you?
No, I still have it.
Okay.
Look at that. Not everyone's cynical and defeated,
no,
Riley.
Hey, I partied for 10 years because I got depressed after all of
this. Hey, I mean, not to minimize the challenges, you know, the planet's in trouble, the country's been taken over by zombies. I mean, it's bad.
True.
But I think that there were enormous amounts of great changes that came about as a result of the 60s. You know, women, their status totally changed. Gays totally changed. You know, the awareness that you don't send, you know, hundreds of thousands of American troops overseas for an unpopular war for enormous periods of time. It's very different now. The civil rights movement, there was a lot of, you know, certain kinds of personal freedom, but it also caused a backlash that we're suffering from now. And there were excesses by the movement.
Absolutely.
You know, the weathermen went crazy and blew up buildings. That was insane. Turned the country against us. The rhetoric was really negative. Some of the cultural stuff was off the charts.
Yes.
And it caused some of the counter-reaction. But in general, I think a lot was accomplished. And I'm very optimistic because I think the American people, when they know the truth, tend to do the right thing. So the struggle is to get them the truth, which you're doing.
Wasn't some of that also like the schisms that happened in the left? Hasn't it become revealed, you know, over time that the agent provocateurs that were there from the FBI were provoking
COINTELPRO.
Yeah, we're starting to put wedges into the left.
Yeah,
itself.
And this is an important thing for people to remember because they might do this again. They might be doing this now. The worst case of this, you know, I say to people, Fred Hampton, 21-year-old leader of the Black Panther Party in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
was assassinated in his bed by the FBI. That is a true statement.
Yes.
Totally verifiable. The FBI had to pay reparations to his family. When I say that, people think I'm nuts.
Mm-hmm.
How could that be?
No, it happens. It did happen.
But what the government did was spread dissension and disputes between organizations, planting false letters and false accusations of sexual affairs and all of this stuff. And they could do that again. There's no question. These people are very serious about holding on to power.
Mm-hmm.
And they are bad news. So I think the lessons from that era are things that we need to keep in mind.
Well, they certainly put a lot of money into stifling any sort of progressive political dialogue in this country. And they put a lot of money into characterizing, as you said, the left and people with progressive values as whack jobs or wing nuts or whatever you want to say. Just like you said that, you know, when you say something like that, the FBI assassinated this man
and culture will be after me tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
But it's truth. But they have a way of assassinating our character. that is so effective and disturbing, and they certainly will stop at nothing.
Yeah, but we also play into it. We're not as effective as we should be. We have a lot of resources. We could muster them better.
What do I got to do?
Well, I think that the growth of this network is the growth of Move On. These mm-hmm. are very encouraging signs, and we're just in the early days of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people in the left and liberal movements have finally figured out that the media actually has an effect on people, and we should pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If you can plant the seed or start spreading the word, it does start to, you know, it starts to grow in the hearts and minds of people.
Absolutely. David Fenton is our guest. We're talking about his new photographic collection, Shots, an American Photographer's Journal, 1967 through 1972. Your current work has shown a remarkable consistency to the work that you were doing back then. You are involved through your agency, David Fenton Communications, with everyone from MoveOn.org to any number of environmental groups. What has driven you over this long arc? Because, you know, Jerry Rubin became an infomercial guy after a while. You know, some folks traded in some things other things. You didn't. Why?
Well, I'm very fortunate and, you know, that I've been able to stick to my principles and still make it in the world. And I think other people could do it, but I'm very fortunate and grateful that I've been able to do that. And I have the support of an amazing family. My sons, Cole and Theo, are 5 and 8. I think they're listening. You'll forgive me for saying hi to them and to my wife.
That's Beth, okay. I got an 8-year-old home, too.
Without whom this book would not have been possible. But, I mean, I was a teenager, and I was permanently damaged by what happened in the 60s. My value system got rearranged. You know, when you walk into a courtroom for the first time, the first day I ever went into a courtroom was mm-hmm. the day they bound and gagged Black Panther leader Bobby Seale, and these federal marshals put a rag in his mouth and tied his hands and feet to a chair, and I watched people fighting physically in the courtroom. So this, you know, created a kind of view in me about what was wrong with our system that was kind of permanent. And I decided to stay active in this area, and I was very fortunate to learn how to do things that enabled me to work on these kinds of issues and also build an organization that could survive. I was very lucky.
Now, you were – obviously, these moments, not only are they frozen on the page, and you've got pictures of musicians like Janis Joplin, you've got John Lennon, B.B. King, Jefferson Starship at that time, and then you've got the Weather Underground,
Airplane.
The Black Panther. The Black Panther, yeah. Did I say Starship?
Yeah.
I meant Airplane.
That came
that
later.
Yeah, Starship came later when it got bad. But out of all these moments here that are obviously frozen in your memory, what was the most impactful moment for you? Even just looking at this collection or looking into your mind right now, what was the one that made you, out of all of them, just like, oh, my God?
Well, that's a tough question. I think it wasn't one moment. I think that I was exposed to a lot of violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I walked around taking pictures with a helmet and a gas mask. And, you know, a police press pass to try to keep these people from hitting me like they were the demonstrators.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, I have a lot of respect for the police, but at that time, they were really going crazy on people, you know, really hurting people. So I think that the cumulative effect of being exposed to all that violence really had a permanent effect on me, that I don't view society as through the rose-colored glasses that are presented to people.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was funny. You know, we got tear gas so often. I remember a party in Washington, D.C. once. We had so much tear gas in our clothing that we had to abandon the party because we realized we were tear gassing each other from the clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it was very apocalyptic, and I think it... you know, it had a lasting impact. But the positive values and the belief that you could change things for the better has really stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I'm still a silly optimist.
And I feel the same way, and I think we all feel that here at Air America. And we certainly appreciate you being with us, David Fenton. The book is Shots, an American Photographer's Journal, 1967 to 1972. It was great talking to you. Will you sign my book on the break?
Absolutely.
I didn't get one. Where's mine?
Coming up next, we got the War on Brain. Stay with us. It's 46 past the hour on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
8:50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to GQ correspondent Lisa DiPaolo, who interviewed five soldiers who guarded Saddam Hussein for 10 months. And she'll, you know, outside of the nuances, I mean, this story is it's a difficult story on some level because it really humanizes this dictator that,
yeah,
who we've all been, you know, rightfully so, you know, judging harshly and having a lot of contempt for, in the sense that, you know, he was a killer, a mass murderer of his own people. But these five guys who had to hang out with him for almost a year had a completely different experience with this guy. And I it's going to be interesting to talk to her about the humanizing of Saddam Hussein in her piece. Right now, though, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is, of course, war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home to the Smithsonian with its collection of rare Americana, featuring Edison's first light bulb, Archie Bunker's chair, an early print of Chappelle's Show that Dave Chappelle can remember taping. The juggernaut continues jacketudinous hebonapes.
Yeah.
This month, with all the pluck and gumption of last year's Special Olympics champion, George W. Bush, once again found himself hopelessly running headlong through a gauntlet of relentless facts and figures, pointlessly flailing his hands into the air and jumping about in a manner Jerry Lewis might find degrading. This five-year-old with the power to kill galumped past an imaginary goalpost as aides around him smiled knowingly, politely ignoring the drool running down his bolo tie and giving him a first prize for effort. The result? Our president may leave a mark on this world even more devastating than that time he was a male cheerleader for a strange boys' academy.
Wow.
For according to the New York Times, ExxonMobil teat suckler Philip Cooney, no relation to George Cooney, the one-note actor who plays himself in every one of his movies. Suddenly and deliberately altered scientific government reports on global warming to make it appear as if things weren't as sucky as they really are. During his hilarious tenure as White House Chief of Staff for the Council on Environmental Quality, or COKE, Cooney, a man with no scientific background, repeatedly wrote things only a man with no scientific background could write. One example of Cooney's edits comes from an October 2002 draft entitled Our Changing Planet.
Yeah.
The draft originally read, many scientific observations indicate that the Earth is undergoing a period of relatively rapid change. This was modified to read, many scientific observations indicate that the Earth is... Hey, is that a puppy? Hey, look, everybody, it's a puppy. What are you talking about? Another selection originally read, unless urgent action is taken, there will be a growing risk of irreversible long-term changes to our climate and oceans. Cooney's version reads, God hates fags. Oh, and hey, is that a puppy? Oh, good job, boy. Yeah, hi, I'm a boy. Sure, it's not very sophisticated, but it is good enough to keep most of this country satisfied, and the rest wondering where that puppy is. In the meantime, the world is yet to suffer the full result of George Bush's virulent hatred for the environment and Crawford tumbleweeds. But don't worry, it's coming. It's coming because 2004 was the warmest year on record. I know this for a fact because bodies keep popping up to the surface in my backyard.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a serial killer. But you'd be surprised how many neighbors overlook that just because of my folksy charm and that gazebo I built. Just goes to show you, murder and global disaster always take a back seat to rising property values and the pursuit of cheap oil. Oh, good job, my guy. And that's today's dispatch from The War on Brains.
Thank you, Mort. That was enlightening and funny as usual.
Yeah.
It's Clooney, though, isn't it, George Clooney?
Yeah, not Cooney. I need a fact checker.
We got a new researcher.
Yeah,
you should throw him a bone every once in a while and say, hey, could you check this out as an L or no L?
Sure, I'll do that.
All right, buddy.
Why don't you ask him to come see at Bananas?
I will.
Yeah, I do that.
Are you going to come to Bananas out there, Mort?
Sure, I'm going to take the shuttle out there.
Yeah, that's nice of you to come out and see
the Mark Maron shuttle. We'll be at Bananas.
You can win a couple of tickets if you can guess why I hate you.
Well, that would be impossible to get. So I guess I'm not going. I guess we both win.
Oh, man.
Get
out. Take your dog with you.
Oh, my goodness.
That was great, man. You really got me. I felt that one hurt in my deep part.
Ooh.
In the deepest part of my soul, that hurt me.
GM. I think that's what he intended.
And then don't try and slough it off like that was part of the character. I know where that came from, Jim Earl.
Yeah.
I love you.
Oh, that doesn't make up for it.
Wow. Back to the lab with him. Huh?
I think I just took one.
Yeah.
Man,
hey,
didn't I?
What are you going to do?
Hey, this is going to be interesting because I read this article that's going to be in GQ this month by Lisa DiPaolo, who interviewed five soldiers who guarded Saddam Hussein for 10 months. And I'll tell you something. You know, you don't want to see Saddam Hussein as the endearing old guy who helps people out, who eats a bowl of cereal in the morning and helps birds and smokes cigars with soldiers guarding him and plays a sort of weird, takes a paternal kind of, a like to these soldiers that were guarding him. It was very strange and touching, I have to admit, in a way, it was touching, Riley.
Well, you know, I mean, they said John Gotti had a certain charm too.
So did Satan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no characterizations of the devil that don't include charm, sophistication, intelligence,
wit.
Wit. Yes, very funny. The devil, hilarious.
Yeah.
I saw him in Vegas twice. In different forms, actually.
That was Wayne Newton.
Once in the form of Alan King, which was not so funny.
You are a hard man.
I am a hard man.
See what Milton did.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be great to talk to Lisa DiPaolo about the soldier she interviewed who actually had a relationship with Saddam Hussein that was not the one you would expect U.S. soldiers to have with him. So we're going to be talking to her. That's coming up next.
And we will also maybe get a call from someone named Future Mark.
All right.
Blah, 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 blah.
6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, and self-righteous annoying people. Good morning, all. Happy Wednesday. We've been talking about a lot of things here. We've been talking about Bill Frist, Senator Dr. Bill Frist, the great waffler, the great spineless man, who said yesterday there would be no vote on Bolton, that President Bush would just appoint him, and then after meeting with Bush said, no, that's not the case, there will be a vote. So the Democrats still fighting this, and fighting well, I might add. Also in the news, Edgar Ray Killen convicted of manslaughter in the slayings of James Cheney, Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, meaning that he is basically accused of murder in the organization of the killings. Some people feel that there were more people involved that should be taken to task. Maybe they will.
Hopefully.
Am I right there, Riley?
Let's hope. Let's pray.
Ken Tomlinson, the Republican stooge who has been appointed to be the head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, has screwed up, thank God, in the hiring of another Republican stooge to spin dirt on Bill Moyer's guests on Bill Moyer's show Now. He's been sort of caught in a lie, saying that he saw no need to consult with the board of CPB because he already okayed it with the president, but she wasn't president at the time.
So I guess she must have okayed it from her previous
day. That's right. Yesterday we were sort of making light of the fact that Saddam Hussein, in this new GQ article, comes off as a human being. We're going to talk with the author right now. If you're a guy who likes Doritos, who likes to talk about girls, who hates Fruit Loops, hey, you ever invaded another country? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you have something in common with Saddam Hussein. It was very much humanized in our next guest's article in GQ. Good morning, Lisa DiPaolo.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for being here. So you interviewed these five guys who were in charge of watching Saddam for 10 months. And I got to be honest with you, you know, there's some touching moments in this thing. And it kind of throws a little wrench into my sense of humanity in a way.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm really glad. Because I thought what was fascinating was how they related to him and how he related to them. And one of them said to me afterwards, you know, it was so hard for them to square this you know, monster with the way he was treating them. And he said, but I guess that's how he managed to manipulate millions of people for decades.
Yeah, that and just fear of being killed.
Yeah, right. But it was a fascinating thing. They saw, you know, a part of him that I don't think world leaders have seen.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think that's true. And I think that, you know, what you characterize in the piece in all his little idiosyncrasies and his habits and his interaction with these guys is that this was he's a lonely guy now, and he's got nobody there, but he's got nothing left. And his only friends are these five army guys that are watching him.
Yeah, and you know, I also think it says a lot about when soldiers treat the prisoners, whoever they are, with civility. You not only are doing your job right, but you're also finding out something about someone that all the interrogation in the world isn't going to find out.
Mm.
Lisa DiPaolo, all five of these guys are from the Pennsylvania National Guard, I guess from around the Scranton area, am I right?
Yes.
Now, it seemed as though, you know, they had a kind of metamorphosis as well. I mean, they went into the service, I guess, for specific reasons. One wanted to go to college and that sort of thing.
Right.
And then they ended up in Iraq, and they ended up in this kind of special assignment for Saddam Hussein. It seemed like a pretty disconcerting series of events. Did it come off that way during the interview?
You know what? I don't think any of these kids ever thought they'd leave their small town, let alone the state.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the Guard, you know, even their parents were told, oh, don't worry, you know, the Pennsylvania National Guard never leaves the state. So, yeah, they were shocked to find themselves there. And it kind of fell into their laps. Like, their unit got there at such a time that it was time to replace the other unit. And in a way, it's really smart that they have guardsmen like this doing this because, you know, these are like real kids. They have real jobs. And I think they related to them differently because they're not jaded, you know, career military people.
They wanted to hate him.
Oh, absolutely. They went into it hating him and you know, feeling that was obviously the reason they were in Iraq was this monster. So the fact that they ended up guarding him was just amazing to them.
Now, Lisa DiPaolo, these five individuals were not allowed to speak even to their families about what they were doing while they were in Iraq.
Right.
Did you get a sense that they were at all hesitant after the fact to talk to you?
Of course, in the beginning, but what they had signed papers when they left that forbade them from talking about certain things such as, you know, exactly where he's been held, troop strength, number of troops, type of, you know, that kind of thing. In other words, anything that would put future soldiers in harm's way. Well, we wouldn't have printed that anyway.
You know, what's interesting is we had a conversation here between Riley and I on the break, Lisa DiPaolo, and we were talking about if, you know, by some, you know, freak of circumstance, Hussein was ever to take power back and become the dictator that he was, he would probably have these guys killed if they were ever to come back to Iraq.
You know, I really wonder about that. Like, one of the things he kept saying to them was, go back and tell your story. And, you know, they had to ask themselves, how manipulative is this? Because clearly they saw a human side of him. And
right.
He probably was smart enough to see that that's what was going on. You know, the funny thing about what you're saying is that he believes he's going to be back in power.
Yes.
And he told them all that, and it was just, and I would say to them, do you really think he believed it? And they did. Like, he was so certain. Like, delusional statements all the time like that.
Well, when you are, I guess, that type of dictator operating at that type of sort of sociopath, you know, he's sort of a sociopath in the
right.
sense that how else is he going to think? He
right.
just seems like, you know, I didn't appoint these people. So I must still be president.
Exactly. Plus, they weren't. He was not allowed to be apprised of any current events. So he would get the newspaper, but they'd have to cut out the news.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was saying is that, like, you know, in the devil, you know, any story about the devil, and you know, in any, you know, any of these, you know, even someone like Tony Soprano, one of our callers said that they are always very, very charming and very inviting, and you actually want to hang around them.
Absolutely. It's like the you know, the old Italian mobsters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like these ruthless maniacs, but then they hang their mother's wash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always have that side. Otherwise, it's impossible to be that effective.
Lisa DiPaolo, there's one thing that kind of struck me in reading this piece, and I wonder, because you said that these guys signed papers not to disclose certain things, there seemed to be no record of any interrogations, which is coming up in the news now because people are accusing the U.S. of delaying interrogations.
There was no interrogation that these five were aware of.
In 10 months?
They weren't the only ones guarding him.
Oh, okay. All right.
But there were none that there was no interrogation that they were aware of. He did have visitors. He had his lawyers came to visit him. The Red Cross came and brought him cigars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cubans, too.
Cubans.
So
waited for that delivery.
So, yeah. So Lisa DiPaolo, the piece appears in this month's GQ, and I want to ask you, in writing the piece, mm-hmm. I noticed, first of all, that you almost had to every few paragraphs repeat that they were surprised that they were sitting with the most evil dictator ever, you know, that you went out of your way to continue to characterize him every few paragraphs, almost as a reminder that we are talking about Saddam Hussein here.
And you know what? Part of the reason I wanted to do that was because that's what they kept telling me they had to do.
To fit in their own heads.
Yes, that at night they'd go back to their bunks and they'd share stories of, like, all the little funny things he did and said, and they'd look at each other and say, do you realize how evil this guy is? You know, they were doing that every day.
So now, what do you think this, two questions, and we can close out with it. First, what was the most interesting thing that you found out about Saddam Hussein in writing the piece? And also, you know, what do you want people to come away with when they read this?
The most amazing thing I thought was his sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
That surprised me.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, I mean, the second part, what come away with, this is the ideal situation when soldiers, A, do their job and come back with a piece of history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's fantastic that, you know, they can shed some light on this guy.
And also, it's sort of like it's going to throw people a little curve to see an intimate portrait of somebody that has been, you know, rightly demonized for practical purposes.
You know, I had no idea what they were going to tell me when I, you know, that he was a jerk or whatever. I had no idea.
It was a very engaging piece, and I want to thank you for joining us. Lisa DiPaolo, the piece on Saddam called Tuesdays with Saddam is in GQ magazine.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lisa.
Take care, Lisa.
It was a pleasure. Bye.
You bet. Okay, so coming up briefly, we are going to talk about Bishop. We're going to talk to Bishop John Shelby Spong, who is going to enlighten us as to some other interpretations of biblical verse as opposed to the religious right's exploitation of biblical verse in order to control people. He's a progressive Christian ex-bishop, do you
yes.
call him that?
Well, yeah,
former
he retired,
bishop,
former bishop.
A former bishop of Newark, New Jersey, yeah?
Yes.
And also, I think Future Mark is going to call, so stay uh-huh. with us. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
Twenty past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking to Bishop John Shelby Spong. He will help us reclaim the Bible for the left. He is the author of The Sins of Scripture, Exposing the Bible's Texts of Hate to Reveal the God of Love. Looking forward to that conversation.
Hey, Maron?
Yeah.
I don't know how you predicted it, but Future Mark is on line one.
Future Mark, that guy's great. Put him through. Hey, buddy,
what's up?
Hey, man, what's going on in 2050?
Nothing much. Doing a little prison time.
You're in prison?
Uh-huh.
What'd you do, man?
I didn't do anything. I'm being detained. They don't have to charge you with anything.
That's totally unconstitutional, man. Aren't you pissed?
No, man. I'm just doing my civic duty. The prison system got so huge, got to be such a big part of the economy, that everyone has to pitch in and support it. It's pretty much all that's left as far as, you know, employment goes.
What?
You know, you work the farm, do the laundry, be a guard, work as prosecutor, warden. Now it's just my turn to be a prisoner.
So you just get called up to go to prison? It's like jury duty or something?
No. Cops come by and cuff you and drag you down there. It's usually someone you know, a neighbor. They're just doing their cop shift. I did mine last week.
Cop? We were a cop? Am I a good cop?
Did you see the movie Bad Lieutenant?
Yeah.
Bit of a loose cannon, my friend.
Oh.
I used to pull my badge and my blaster way before my shift is over.
I knew if I was ever given a gun and a little power, I'd turn into an a-hole. Wait, did you also say we were a prosecutor?
Yeah, and a defender. Everybody takes turns working in every part of the legal system. Get it? It's more fair that way. And, you know, all the best universities have moved to prisons. I've applied to Harvard Leavenworth. I want to go back to prison school so I can be a judge. Of course, my my safety prison school is Cal State Long
Beach. Whoa, what's that? What's going on?
I'm in line to be tortured.
Tortured? Come on, we still got torture?
Hard habit to break, dude. It gets results. Besides, after we dumped the Geneva Convention, the whole world started whining like babies. So rather than give up torture, now everybody gets tortured. It's kind of a way to say to the world, we can dish it out, and we can also take it.
God!
It sucks, but it's fair.
You know how I am. I can't take physical pain. What are they going to do to us?
Well, you know, it's up to Joe Rogan, really.
Joe Rogan? The host of Fear Factor?
Yeah, but now he's the host of Torture Night Live. It's like this show the whole world watches. So the torture has to be kind of funny and interesting.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we're going to be tortured by Joe Rogan, and he's not even doing stand-up. What do you think he'll do?
I don't know. It's hard to say, really. Probably put on a puppet show making fun of my God. Maybe some half-drowning. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to eat a bag of crickets. Plus, I'll be nude. The audience loves that.
That is barbaric, man.
Well, if it makes you feel any better. After I'm tortured, I'm going to a nice dinner, and I'm thinking about treating myself to a shopping spree.
In prison?
Uh-huh.
How does that work?
Well, dude, the private sector saw these inmates and said, hey, why aren't we in there? So I'm going to probably go to Red Lobster tonight and eat me some shrimps, and then maybe go to Banana Republic before lockdown.
Wait, whoa, whoa. So the prisons have shops and restaurants?
And churches and stadiums.
Stadiums?
Yeah, well, they figured since most of the athletes wind up here anyways, why not move all the leagues inside? NFL, baseball, hockey, a lot of hockey.
All right, wait. So from what you're saying, the U.S. in 2050 is just one big prison?
Always was, Mark. Always was. Well, here goes nothing. Ow, Jesus, Joe, come on, man. Riders are tired. Focus group like. I got to go, dude. I'll talk to you later.
Well, wait. Aren't you going to warn me about something?
Isn't this enough?
Yeah. I guess I should be really cool with Joe Rogan from now on, huh?
Couldn't hurt. See you, buddy.
Later.
Wow.
Yeah, things are going. It keeps getting weirder in the future, doesn't it?
Up, yeah.
Well, I know. Coming up in the very near future, on Friday, we'll be broadcasting live from the T Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. That's at the Union Street and 7th Avenue T Lounge. All right, that's this Friday from 6 to 9. We'll have free coffee, a bunch of giveaways. We'll be joined by DMC of Run DMC fame and New York City Council Speaker
Gifford Miller.
We'll be there, so come on by. Gifford Miller has never been so excited. I don't even know what the guy has to say, but boy, we're going to be happy to see him.
First in war, first in peace, last in the last poll.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so he's hanging on to a dream, Gifford Miller.
Yeah.
But he's going to be with us, and that's going to be fun. Folks, we're raising money to send inner city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids, $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids, and $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for an entire child. Go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. Momentarily, we'll be talking to Bishop John Shelby Spong, who's going to help us reinterpret the Bible, because God knows, if I could say, God knows it's being misinterpreted by people like the people that were standing in front of the hospice while Terry Schiavo was dying. The people right now, Jeb Bush, the people who Jeb Bush represents when he says, as opposed to apologizing for being wrong in terms of the condition of Terry Schiavo, he is pandering to the religious base of the Republican Party to continue to crucify the husband of this woman who wanted to die peacefully if this ever happened to her. He tried to facilitate that. He took care of her for years, and now he's continuing and being demonized in the name of life.
In the name of life, and by the way, in the name of Jeb Bush's political career. Let's be clear about that also.
Yeah, but let's be clear about also, as you said, the religious right is trying to hijack the morality of this country.
Yes.
To institutionalize their particular version of morality, which isn't very moral at all, and it's quite hypocritical.
Well, they really do have to stare in the face, and I think that Bishop Spong will explore this with us, some of the things that have been done wrong in the name of religion. The latest of which was, of course, the conviction of Edgar Ray Killen, Pastor Edgar Ray Killen, in the killing of Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner 41 years ago.
It's amazing the topics that Bishop Spahn covers in this book. He talks about all of the moral issues that are exploited by the religious right,
yes.
and he reframes them. You know, he talks about birth control, he talks about environmentalism, he talks about sexism in the context of the Bible, he talks about the roles of men and women. This should be a very interesting conversation.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to it because, you know, we've had some progressive Christians on, but not enough, and I always get accused of lumping them all together, but not today.
Not today.
And I'm sure that Bishop Spahn wants something to say about that, the lumping together of Christians.
That's coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Show how righteous we are. We have to show those liberal hippies.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Welcome. Good morning. It's Wednesday. Our next guest wants to reclaim the Bible from right-wing fundamentalists. He is the former Episcopal Bishop of Newark, New Jersey, and the author of The Sins of Scripture, Exposing the Bible's Texts of Hate to Reveal the God of Love. He's also the author of Rescuing the Bible from Fundamentalism. Please welcome Bishop John Shelby Spahn to the show. Good morning, Bishop.
Good morning. Good to be with you both.
It's great to have you. You know, I'm one of these guys that gets accused of lumping all Christians together. And I don't mean to, and I try very hard to separate them, and I assume that that's what you're doing as well.
Well, the public voice of Christianity is rather extremely right-wing. It's identified mostly in today in the South. I look at it, and it looks to me like the old George Wallace voters who've mm-hmm. just sort of been perfumed a little bit in today's world.
And there are more of them.
Well, there seem to be more of them. They've been galvanized around a couple of interesting issues, opposition to abortion, opposition to homosexual people being the two sort of gut issues, the wedge issues that are clearly being manipulated today to keep them faithful. I don't know. When I look at the South, and I grew up in the South, I grew up in an evangelical fundamentalist church in the South. Mm. I lived about a block from Billy Graham.
Oh, wow.
But as I grew up, I somehow wonder why it is that the most overtly religious part of America is also the part that practiced slavery until a war forced them to give it up. How do you put those two things together? Then they practiced segregation until the courts forced them to at least give that up overtly. And in the South, they execute more criminals than all the rest of the country, indeed all the rest of the developed world put together. They oppress women. They've never passed the Equal Rights Amendment. And today, the crusade is to oppress gay and lesbian people. I don't know how you put religion together with that or the Bible Belt together with that mentality. I think it needs to be exposed.
I think some of them would like it to be the way it was. That there are some in Dominion Christianity and Reconstructivist Christianity, which I don't think is Christian at all. Some of these people think that the best time in America was before the Civil War.
Well, yeah. There's a deep strand of racism mm-hmm. in the religious right today. And if you go back and look at the political arena, the Democratic Party was the universal party of the South. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a solid Democratic majority. But the only trouble is no black people could vote. And when the Voting Rights Act came in the Johnson administration and black people began to register and vote, the racism of the white Southerner couldn't tolerate the presence of the black Democratic voters. Mm. And so they became religious. They became talk about family values and stopped talking about segregation and racism, talked about family values. And that's a little bit more acceptable. Nobody today wants to go out and say, you know, I'm a blatant racist, because that's not acceptable.
Mm.
But you can go out and say, I'm really in favor of family values and punishing gay and lesbian people because they violate the Bible and all that sort of stuff. So I think what I tried to do in this book was to expose the biblical text that people have used throughout history to denigrate other human beings on the basis of race, on the basis of religion, on the basis of sexual orientation, women, children, and even other religions. You know, the idea that there's only one true pathway to God, and if you don't walk my pathway, God's going to send you to hell. That's a funny kind of God, and that's a funny kind of religion to me.
Hmm. You know, Bishop Spong, I think what you're talking about is kind of epitomized by the fact that Edgar Ray Killen, who was just convicted yesterday of manslaughter in the Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner case, was also a part-time pastor. I mean, people referred to him as in Philadelphia, Mississippi, as Preacher Killen.
Yeah, it goes way back. In the American Civil War, an Episcopal bishop resigned from his Episcopal post and accepted a general's rank in the Confederate Army to fight for the preservation of slavery. Now, again, the issues are never quite so simple. There were other issues involved in slavery, but slavery was the driving emotional issue in the Civil War. There's no question about that.
We're talking to Bishop John Shelby Spong. The book is The Sins of Scripture. Let's talk about some of these issues that are being used by the religious right by misinterpreting biblical verse. So, you know, let's start with the idea of marriage. How about that? How about gay marriage?
Well, it's a wonderful idea. If you want to be literal about the Bible, a man can have as many wives as he can afford. King Solomon had 1,000 wives, and that didn't seem to bother anybody. And underneath that was the definition of a woman as property.
Mm-hmm.
In the 10th commandment, and people are always quoting the 10th commandment, especially Judge Moore down in Alabama,
sure.
And he's a very religious man. But the 10th commandment says women are the property of men. It says you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. It's mm-hmm. clear the woman is part of the property. Actually, the house comes before the wife in that commandment, a little bit more valuable. The 7th commandment says the same thing. 7th commandment, the one that says you shall not commit adultery, was written when polygamy was the style of marriage, mm-hmm. not monogamy, mm-hmm. and a man could have as many wives as he could afford. Now, when King Solomon had 1,000 wives, I don't know what adultery means if one man owns 1,000 women. My sense is if you've got 1,000 wives and still have some need to commit adultery, you've got a problem. It's a pretty big problem. It's not even a sexual problem or a moral problem. You've got a deep emotional problem. It's a fascinating study. So we have all these ideas. Even people that... You know, the religious right wants to carry America back to its Christian roots. They ought to go back and read American history. Benjamin Franklin at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia moved that they open this meeting with prayer, and it was voted down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they ought to go back and look. Thomas Paine, who was sort of the philosophical author of the dynamic power that led to the Revolution, was an atheist. He was called a dirty little atheist.
But is there room within the progressive Christian point of view, in the umbrella of progressive Christianity, for gay couples to exist as married couples?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
You see, my church, and I'm very proud of my church. My church today mm-hmm. has a gay bishop who has been elected by our people and confirmed by the whole general convention of our church. When I retired as the Bishop of Newark, we had 35 out-of-the-closet gay and lesbian clergy serving in our churches, and 31 of them lived openly with their partners, and I was very proud of every one of them.
It's Eugene Robinson you're talking about.
He's not Eugene, interestingly enough. His name is Gene V. Robinson.
Yes, we talked to him. Yeah, he's a great guest. Yeah,
absolutely. Bishop Spong, we've seen the right wing, and the religious right in particular, move very effectively and efficiently into the political arena, and in an attempt, obviously, to impose their views in politics. Do you think that progressives will have to make a similar kind of move, and how is that move best effected if you think it has to
conservatives happen? Can always organize better than liberals. Liberals are like herding cats. They all have different opinions, and part of being liberal is to be open to a wide variety of possibilities. Conservatives can be single-issue people.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that the Republican Party has learned how to marshal its conservative forces, and they're experts at it, and I think that's going to have to be countered. It didn't just develop yesterday. If you go back to the campaign between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis, where we had Willie Horton introduce subtle playing on racial fear, playing on the crime issue, and then Governor Dukakis said that he wouldn't do anything if somebody attacked his wife in one of the interviews. So he looked, and they portrayed him as soft on crime, and they accused him of being a member of the American Civil Liberties Union. I think every American ought to be a member of the American Civil Liberties Union because they protect the liberties of everybody, right and left, conservative and liberal, radical, mm-hmm. Nazis, mm-hmm. Klansmen. I think that's just part of what it means to be America. And to enshrine religious prejudice into our Constitution is a brand new idea. Our Constitution's been amended a number of times. It's always been amended to make it more open to more people. It's never been amended to sort of set aside a group of people as victims or prejudiced people against whom you're prejudiced. And if we can do that, if the majority today gets to the place where it can discriminate in the Constitution against a minority, you just better be not surprised when tomorrow's majority begins to discriminate against you. I mean, if it cuts at the very heart and fiber of what it means to be an American.
And it would shift the entire political system into something more resembling fascism, I would imagine.
I think this country is sufficiently strong so that it flirts with extremes, and then there's a reaction, and I expect a reaction.
It's starting to happen. Yes. I'd like to cover also, I want to know how the progressive Christian viewpoint is on the issue of reproductive freedom, of when life begins, and this type of thing. How do you address the abortion issue?
Well, it's a complex issue. I don't know anybody that's pro-death. I think that's a propaganda victory. Mm-hmm. These people are, we're pro-life, you must be pro-death if you don't agree with us. I'm pro-life, but I'm pro-life for women, and I know if you make abortion illegal, women die in abortion back alley operations. I've been to Africa, and I've seen these children who die before they're 6 years old because there is not enough food to keep them alive beyond that point. And anybody that thinks that birth control ought not to be introduced into places where the population simply cannot be sustained by the environment of those countries, to me, is a pro-death person. And I think mm-hmm. we've got to claim that agenda and go back on that. My sense is that we ought to minimize abortion, but the way you do that is having effective public school sex education. You make available birth control devices to people, and all of those are things that the religious right is very much opposed to. They're not in favor of sex education. They're not favor of the use of condoms to mm-hmm. stop the spread of AIDS, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to be challenged overtly. It's not just the religious right. It's the new pope
who
articulates the same thing.
It seems to me that the religious right and the Catholic Church, as you very correctly point out, have managed very successfully to portray abortion as being symptomatic of some form of irresponsible promiscuity, that they've linked I guess what they consider to be irresponsible sexual behavior to abortions. How do you break that link?
Well, I think that's true. Basically, birth control, anti-birth control, and anti-abortion, and in some sense, anti-abortion is the ultimate form of birth control. But I think you ought not to go into that because I think that's a very complex issue. But it's a male society controlling the bodies of women. In the Roman Catholic Church, to see a group of postmenopausal male figures dressed in their ecclesiastical frocks sitting around in a circle, pronouncing in the name of a God named Father what a woman can do with her own body strikes me as the height of something or other. You know, I think if you're going to have an anti-abortion position, then women ought to be part of the decision-making, and they're not allowed to be that in the Roman Catholic Church, and indeed in most Christian Protestant churches. They're still a male-dominated institution. Now, the Southern Baptists said in their convention several years ago that it was okay for a woman to be a pastor, but she could never be a senior pastor because the Bible says a woman should not have authority over a man. I have a daughter who's a captain in the United States Marine Corps with 2 tours of duty in Iraq already under her belt. And I'd like to tell you that if you say to that daughter of mine, I forbid a woman to have authority over a man, she's going to ask you to go someplace where you're not very interested in going, I think.
So, if we can, to wrap this up a little bit, or to put I want to know, we've been talking about the Terri Schiavo case. I want to know about the progressive Christian point of view of euthanasia and respecting families' rights and these kind of issues.
Once again, I'm pro-life, but I don't think a breathing cadaver is a living creature. And that's the distinction. This is an issue that would not have been an issue 100 years ago because Terri Schiavo would have died,
mm-hmm.
and so would all the other people that we're able to keep alive.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get to the place where medical technology and scientific development allows us to not just extend life, which we all applaud, but begins to have us postpone death, which is quite another thing, then I think we've got to say life has got to be defined as meaningful dialogue and the potential for relationships. And when that departs, it's no longer life that we're talking about. It's a breathing cadaver, and that's not a human being.
Well, that's, you know, this has been enlightening for me, and I really appreciate you being here, Bishop Spong. And the book is The Sins of Scripture, Exposing the Bible's Texts of Hate to Reveal the God of Love. Love to talk to you again. Thanks for coming.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be with the Marks. Thank you a lot.
Coming up next, we'll have a little wrap-up. We've got the Cliff Notes, and we'll talk a little bit more about what's coming up this week here on Morning's Edition. It's 47 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. This is Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, on the air. MorningsEdition.com, Air America Radio.
800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Embryonic stem cell research. Is it right? Here's a message from the Speck is the Life Ministries and the Reverend Messersmith.
We've all heard the godless liberals who say it's okay to chop up stem cells and use them for research. But stem cells are living things. And if you don't believe me, I have one right here. Isn't that right, Sammy the Stem Cell?
Whatever you say, numbnuts!
Sammy, won't it be great to develop into a human being made in the image of God?
First, humans can kiss my microscopic ass. And second, screw God. You know what I mean? I'm God. Maybe humans are the virus. Did you see the Matrix?
But Sammy, don't you want to be a little baby?
A baby? Sure. Only if I get to breastfeed. I mean, big milky ones. Wow! Reverend, you and I think alike, you dirty butt slurp. No, I don't want to be some whining, helpless little poop machine. Abort me now! Hack me up and suck me out with a vacuum! That's what Sammy says!
But don't you think it's cruel to do research on stem cells, Sammy? It's murder.
That's not murder. I'll show you murder! Hey, Tommy Stem Cell, come over here!
What's up, Sammy? Hey, what was it? Was that a knife?
Eat steel, you greasy zygote! Look, Reverend, I'm killing the chair for cancer!
Stop it! Stop, I say, you horrible little thing! You're horrific!
And you're welcome, ass munch! You better hightail it out of here unless you want a piece of what Tommy got! And now I'm gonna eat him!
On second thoughts, listen to what Sammy says when he says, humans, f*** humans. Humans suck.
Yeah!
There you go.
Ooh,
54.
You're going to hell, all of you.
Well, hell yeah. Yeah, you're sorry.
You're
just by proximity,
you
you're
follow,
on the boat.
You follow Bishop Spong with Sammy the Step.
That was a decision made far above my head,
oh, okay,
Mark Riley.
All right.
We're going to land this thing. It's 54 past the hour. I, of course, am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley listening to Morning Sedition. Good morning, Ithaca, New York. We're on WNYY Progressive Talk Radio, 1470 AM in Ithaca, every weekday from 6 to 9. Welcome aboard. Hey, folks, we'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Parksville, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th. That's the location of that Tea Lounge, Union Street and 7th Avenue, this Friday from 6 to 9. We'll have DMC from Run DMC and New York City Council Speaker
Gifford Miller,
of which has become strangely, we're strangely excited for reasons that are beyond us. We're raising money also to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. $35, folks. Sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for an entire kid. So go to morningsedition.com and click on Camp Air America for details. Don't send me the check like my mommy did yesterday. Send me the check, Riley.
Yeah, but she did the right thing.
She did. I gotta bring it downtown, figure out where to give it to the guy, because I could have her write another one, or because I.
Or you could buy yourself a couple of shirts.
No, that's what she said. She was so funny. That was ridiculous. Because I used to say she used to send me checks so I could get a shirt or a present for myself. So she calls me and goes, "Yes." She goes, "I'm sorry, I sent it to the wrong place. If you want to, you can cash it and get yourself a shirt, or you can." I'm like, no, I'm gonna bring it to the people, to the kids.
There you go.
Here we go. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. U.S. spending on the Iraq War may soon surpass the Korean War budget. Disturbingly, Pentagon experts quickly pointed out that the Iraq War will undoubtedly cost much less than the next Korean War. The Korean War cost about $350 billion, though a lot of what was later recouped, in syndication fees for the show MASH. Yeah. A study suggests that genes can influence political ideologies. The easiest way for geneticists to tell a liberal from a conservative is to kill a stem cell and check to see if the other stem cells freak out. A new poll shows Americans are generally in a funk. When interrupted during dinner, most Americans said they felt fat and scared. And then the pollster started asking questions. 61% are still confident the Bush administration can protect the nation from another terrorist attack, but 99% of those people think the fish on the back of their car can signal angels. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Another $50 billion for Iraq. Wake up, sheeple. That money could be better spent on exploring Mars or sending astronauts back to the moon or turning stem cells into unicorns with rainbows coming out of their heads. You broke it. You buy it, America. That's it.
Wow.
So tomorrow, Riley,
Legs McNeil is going to talk about the incubator of punk CBGBs right here in New York. Documentary filmmaker Robert Greenwell will talk about one of our favorite subjects, Walmart, and four words you never thought you'd hear. Wayne Gilman in space, all for you tomorrow here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, man.
You too, man.